Welcome to the podcast of the Center for Asian American Christianity at Princeton Theological Seminary, a space for ongoing dialogue among Asian American scholars, ministry leaders, and activists.
Now we are turning our attention to the context of not just India, but Indian American experience with Reverend Dr. Kamalesh Stephen. Kamalesh Stephen is a pastor of the Asian Indian Christian Church in Berkeley Heights, New Jersey, and he's been serving there since 2015. But he's also quite an accomplished scholar, having completed his dissertation here at Princeton Theological Seminary with a focus on preaching and preaching practices for pastoral leadership in Asian Indian immigrant congregations. He is an ordained minister in the Church of South India and has a standing with the United Church of Christ here in the United States. His pastoral journey started in 1996 at Grace Trinity United Church of Christ in Philadelphia, ministering to immigrant families, both first and second generation. And he continued building his pastoral sensibilities by doing his dissertation based on those dynamics of intergenerational experiences in Indian American church. He also has a Master's of Divinity from Eastern Baptist Theological Seminary, now Palmer Theological Seminary. And so it's really a privilege not just to have Kamalesh's experiences in scholarship, but also his experiences in the pulpit as he shares with us on the topic of Asian Indian multiple belongings. The time is yours.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Usually, I don't get an applause before I start. Usually after, just want to, before I started, just a little bit of a clarification about the way you term us as a community. You say about us as Indian American, and it doesn't sometimes go well with us because you are changing American Indian and Indian American, that finally you recognize us as Indians. Sometimes we are called as South Asians. Well, again, we don't fit into the South Asian bloc because South Asian bloc has Nepalese and Sri Lankans and Pakistanis and all of that. So that's the reason why I called this one as Asian Indian, because I want to just make that term a little bit more, give a little bit more clarity before I start sharing. I am a pastor. I tell stories. And somebody asked me, are you nervous? I said, yes. Because to preach is very different than to present here. Because to preach, I don't have to do citations. I don't have to give footnotes of where I've taken my material. But for to do a lecture like this, you must be wondering, where did you take this one? Let us give us a little bit more information. So it's a little different. Is it nerve-wracking? Absolutely. I've done this so many years, but still it is so different. So here we are. Thank you, David, for inviting me. Thank you, Easton, for inviting me. Thank you, folks who are online and who are here. Quite an honor for me to do this. I live on a cul-de-sac in Hillsborough. If you will only come into my street, if you live on that street. And so my neighbor drives his car. I'm walking my pet and he drives the car and he stops. For some reason, we were talking about something that we were doing in terms of house maintenance. And so he looks at me and he says, hey, I need to have your phone number. And I said, okay. And so I share my phone number and he sees my name and he sees my last name as Stephen. And then he looks at me and says, so you're a Christian? Yes. So are you a Catholic? I said, no. So you're a Christian? I said, yes again. Now, the reason why I say this is many a times people who are online or even who are here, you walk on the road and you meet another Asian Indian and you think they're all Hindus. That's the common understanding for many of you. You see an Indian on the street and you immediately think that they are Hindus. And oftentimes I get this question and it always, I have a little bit of a chuckle. I said, and the next question that they ask me is, do you speak Hindu? So I have to tell them, no, we don't speak Hindu. If you are somebody who knows how to speak Hindi, you speak, but you don't understand. We have 15 major languages in India. And all of them are represented in churches today in North America. So we are linguistically diverse. we are ethnically diverse, so it's very hard to do this. So the reason for all of this is the little known fact about the Asian Indians. The Migration Policy Institute report, basically, I took the liberty of moving it from a little bit, it says about 4.7 million Indians are here. But I took the liberty of just saying in whole numbers, it's about 5 million Indians are here. And it's about 20%. That's a million Christians. So if you see somebody, just don't assume they are Hindus. There are about a million of us in this place. And if you see us in terms of percentage, our percentage is larger, much, much bigger in America than we are in India. We are only 3%, but again, in a billion people, 3% is 3 million. But here we are 5 million and we are almost 20%. So we are 1 million Christians who live in America. So that's my intro piece for you. Now, what am I going to do in this piece is I divided myself. Usually I don't give up my cards as a preacher. I like inductive preaching. I like you to hold the guns and you'll want to know, hey, where is this guy taking me? But for a lecture, I have to tell you what I'm going to do. So here is what I want to do. First, I want to tell you my story because that's important for me. I want to tell my side of the story. The reason why I want to tell that story is maybe if some of you are on the audience, some of you are here, will say, he's telling something about me that I can identify. I see myself tucked in his story. So that's the first thing that I want to do. The second thing I want to talk about the Asian Indian immigrant story. What are the time spans that we came in? And what did we come in for? All of those things. And the third part is what I want to talk about, the Asian Indian church's story. I'll tell you later. And the last part is God's story. God's got a bigger story to do. And how as Asian Indians participate in God's grand story. That's what I will do here. If I want to do a theology for or on behalf of Asian Indians, two things for me are very, very particular. Number one is it has to be contextual. I cannot transplant a theology of Indian the way we did theology back in India and transplant it or transport it, but it has to be a theology that is fixed in this place. What is my experience here? So number one, my story, I need to talk about context in here. Not what I experienced back here, but what I do here. So that's number one. And number two is not only it should be contextual, but it has to be autobiographical. I'm not saying I'm autobiography, but I'm talking about autobiographical in the sense I need to tell my story, not as an autobiography, but in a larger about my faith journey, about your faith journey. So the reason why theology for Asian Indians should be both contextual and also autobiographical. Now, I came in 1990. I came as a student. And if you come as a student, you're an F1 visa. Now, F1 visa is a privileged visa. It's not a petitioned visa. If the USIS thinks that I can go there and I can make myself and study in a university, it's a privilege. They can reject me. Before I came here, I got rejected 3 times. So the 4th time I got it and I came here. So I came in 1990 to do seminary. And I did seminary. Halfway through the seminary, I went home to get married. Got married, brought my wife here, and she went to a university here. And I raised 2 of my children in this context. They are all grown up and I've left home. We are empty nesters. So that's a little bit of my story of when I came here. But when I come here, when I'm here, I don't fit into the dominant culture. I'm always an outsider. I felt outside being here. But what I found was I was an outsider when I went back home also. I didn't fit in India too. I was stuck in time. I was raising my children in the memory of India that I knew. But when I went back home, that India was not there. My nephews and nieces have gone way past. The things that I ask my children not to do, they do it. So I am stuck in time. My children are stuck in time. Is that right? So when I was writing my dissertation, normally most of the immigrant students would write their stories on the theme of marginality. Is that right? We were marginal here. We are nowhere in the center. We are pushed to the margins because that's what the dominant one wants to do. I resonated with the stories of Zhang Yang Li on the theory of marginality. I also resonated with the story of Sang Li on liminality. But both of them didn't work for me. The reason why is marginality kind of puts like a victim mentality. And I really didn't want to go there. Liminality, it worked beautifully because it provides a very nice creative space, isn't it? What Sang Li does is he takes Victor Turner's work and he basically says there is separation, there is liminality, and there is a re-entry. The separation happened, but then there is a liminality was there, but our re-entry back was not easy. So liminality did not work for me either. That hermeneutical key did not work, and I didn't want to go there. But what I instead did was, I used the work of Rita Nagashima Brock on interstitiality. Now, interstitiality are these tissues. Interstitial tissues, these are a biological term. These are interstitial tissues, are tissues that are in between organs. They are vital. They are really vital because without them, the organs don't function. And what she says is, she's a TCK. If you know who TCKs are third culture kids. Now, that if you ask a third culture kid, where are you from? They will say, I don't know. I really don't know because they have multiple belongings. If you ask my children, they will tell you, they won't tell you they're from India. They might say they're from Philadelphia or they're from New Jersey. So what Rita Nagashima Brock basically does is she takes all of her experience and she says, if I hold them together, and when I begin to read scripture as an interstitial person who has experienced both the margins and the center, very important. So when I wrote that thesis and when I, even in my own pastoral work, I am a pastor and I'm a preacher. So what I do is I read my text from the center and also from the margins, because sometimes I am in the center. Among my own folks who don't have a theological education, who don't have a PhD, I'm in the center. But in the dominant culture, sometimes I'm on the margins. So what I do is I read these stories and my preachings are always on those things because I want to give voice to those stories that are muffled in our communities. Is it in the Filipino community or in the many of our immigrant communities, there are many, many stories that get pushed under the rug. I want to listen to those stories and I want to incorporate them in my preaching. Because then what happens is my preaching becomes authentic. So interstitiality worked for me. And that's my story, just a little bit. And here we go. The immigrant story, we came sometime in 1940s. The way we came, this is part of the Commonwealth. India is part of the Commonwealth. So we came out of India. This was in the 1940s. Many of them came as farm workers from the state of Punjab, which is in the north. They went to Hong Kong and then to Vancouver, Hawaii, and then to California. This is our first, in 1940 we came. And interestingly, when we came, most of them were men. They left their families behind with the idea that they will come, make money, and go back home. That was the only idea that they came here. So they came here in all of those ways. They were all men. The 1960s, when the liberalization happened, the Immigration Act kind of opened up the floodgates for us. Very interestingly, in 65, professionals, doctors and nurses, never has this happened, doctors and professionals were given green cards in India for them to come here to work because America had a shortage of medical personnel. They brought them here in 65. But what Raymond Williams says, that is so Raymond Williams is this historian, writes a lot about immigrant church, and he says, in 65 when they came, the women came first. And the men came on the shoulders of these women. Now, It changed family dynamics in their homes. That is why men wanted to assert their authorities in the church. Because they didn't get to do that at home. Because the woman was earning. Isn't that? So that's what happened in 65 when we opened up. The third one happened was in 80s, when the family reunification, which if I'm a green card holder or a citizen, I can apply for my family to come here. Now, the only problem in that one was there were not professionals who came. There were non-professionals. That's why you see travel agencies, you see grocery stores, you see gas stations, because some of them worked as bank managers. Now, banks won't accept here, isn't it? So they came here and they went to places where they filled medicines. Those are non-professional workers. They were the ones who found it extremely hard to get into the society. Now, the last one is the 1990 when, again, Y2K. What the reason why I wanted to say that about the Y2K is it just opened up the floodgates like anything. Earlier, there were only people from pockets of India were coming into America. But in 1990, what happened was pretty much every state in India had somebody living here. Somebody from an ordinary village who had a computer education, who knew how to fix a Y2K bug, came here. Yeah, it just opened up the floodgates in 1990. And then was when all of the student population, of course, student population was coming from 65 on. But then in the 90s, it just accelerated quite a bit. So that's your Asian Indian immigrant story. And I want to quickly go because I think I have only a few minutes. I want to talk about the Asian Indian church story because that's very important too. I don't know if I should call it a fledgling to a civilization, but we are somewhere getting there. When we came in the 40s, we never had a chance because the ones who came were Sikh. And so the earliest Gurdwara was in 1912, much, much earlier, in Stockton, California, 1912. The reason why I said this was because when we left, when people in 65 went to, they said they were going to America, especially from the state of Kerala. In 1965, when they were coming to America, when they said, hey, can we go and form churches? They said, don't do it. Go and find yourself in the denomination. If you are a Marthoma, if you are Anglican, if you go become an Episcopalian. The reason why they said that was because we were not enough. There was numerically, we were small. Financially, we just couldn't run the church. So they basically said, don't do that. Find yourself, go back and look at it. The church where I serve, it's called AICC. It's called Asian Indian Christian Church. We were established in 1989. Now, when we formed that church in 89, the worship was in English. It was an English-speaking church, which means we were able to embrace language diversity, right? If you were speaking Telugu, if you're speaking Kannada, if you're speaking Tamil, if you're speaking Hindi, you can come and worship in this church. So we formed this church in 1989, and that was an English-speaking church. So everybody found a place. But what happened later on, as the time progressed from 80 to 90, when many, many who began to speak different languages came into the U.S., what we did was we began to form language-based churches. A few churches that we birthed because there was a large Telugu-speaking community that was part of my church, broke away and formed a Telugu congregation. Some went Hindi-speaking, went and formed a Hindi congregation. It only happened in the 90s. So until then, we were just doing things together, right? Now, the reason why they did was the first generation wanted to have a liturgy, wanted to have safety net, wanted to have a church where they could come because the rest of the 7 days, they were outside in the world and they wanted to come. And even today, if you come to my church, there is more activity and energy in the fellowship hall, not in the worship. You know what I even suggested to my board of trustees? I said, hey, listen, I think we need to reverse it. Let's have fellowship first, because then we'll have energy in worship. That's what happened. So for the liturgy and the safety and the comfort, the pastor's role during that time was so different. It was not just preaching on Sunday morning. I have driven people for Social Security. I have taken them for a driver's license. I have helped them do practices. The pastor's role was so different at that time. Now, all of us, we've talked about silent exodus, is it right? It happened to us too. It happened to us. There was a silent exodus of the second gen leaving the church because all they wanted was this individual faith of born again, somebody talked about earlier. And they found the church outside of the immigrant church offered that. And they literally went. Now, what is happening right now? As Kurian says in her book, she says there is a return of the first generation, of the second generation back into the church. And that's what is happening. What she says is because the first generation is beginning to a little bit more open to inviting them and having. You know, earlier they said you can have one Sunday a month. You know, now what they're saying, you can have two Sundays a month. Now, the church where I serve, what we have done is we have done a blended worship, which means our young people lead praise and worship, but there is also liturgy that others can feel comfortable worshiping space. So we have, the first generation is beginning to make changes to invite the first, second generation come and worship with us. Now, what the future of the church looks like? Even now, the Asian Indian immigrant church is driven and led by first generation leadership. That has to change. That really has to change. It has to change where second gen needs to be given leadership. But look at, I always tell this in when I come to PTS, my association with PTS goes way back to 2004. From 2004, I've been associated. Only now I see a few Indian faces here, right? There's no second generation who are coming into leadership positions. They're not coming into seminaries. But I think I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful that I will be able to identify second gen leadership to come to be a part of it. And I am, as a first gen, and I've been talking about to my church council, I said, hey, listen, I would train somebody. I would see them take this church. I want leadership at the second generation level. So it's happening. It is happening. Here, God's grand story, and I'm going to finish it because I have only 5 minutes. What we have in the Asian Indian, we think that we have come to the promised land. This is our promised land. But whenever I read scripture, for God, the people of Israel had responsibilities even in the promised. I think they have a greater responsibility in the promise. Jomon, who writes, Jomon George is a professor at the New York Theological Seminary, and he writes about the silence of the Asian Indian immigrant community with the Black Lives Movement. You know, all of this was happening, and probably we didn't enter into this one because the problem is we were considered a model minority. We were considered a model minority. And then we also saw that America invited us. And how can you go against Uncle Sam? And also we thought to ourselves, Black Lives Matter was a white and a black issue. Other thing is, it's a total indifference. Elie Wiesel says it so beautifully. He says, the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is indifference. For us, it hasn't affected us. Maybe that one incident, a few Asian Indians got shot. Or after 9/11, there was a Sikh young man who got shot. And we immediately started waking up. Nothing has happened to us. But then God is calling us to participate. I find ways, I often push my congregation to find ways to participate or to even see. You know, for me as a preacher, I wanted to create this awareness. I wanted my people to be a part of all that's happened. Because I think as an interstitial person, I need to participate. I need to participate in all of the struggles of marginalized communities. And so my task is to create awareness. My task is to identify. My task is also do some kind of an activism. That's where I want to take this church. Now, when the whole the Black Lives Movement happened, and if you talked about it, if you engaged in it, We were categorized as liberals. One time, on a Palm Sunday sermon, I stood up and it's right at that time, the Million Man March in D.C. had happened. And I said to my congregation, you know, if you think Palm Sunday was a very nice event, triumphal entry, no, it wasn't. Jesus was making a statement, isn't it? And I said, what Jesus did was like a Million Man March. Now people pulled me on the side and said, Pastor, I don't think we need to say this. That's where we are. That's where we are. But I don't think we need to just leave it there. But there is a passion among the second gens. Really, there is a tremendous passion among second gens. My children talk about it. So when Jomon writes that article in the Promised Land, and he's talking about a lot of people in the world outside think that the Asian Indian community is silent, the Black Lives Movement. And he says, no, I don't think they are silent. Their percentage of participation is low, but I don't think they are silent, he says. This is the reason why he says is they did a prayer group, Pray for America. They took on to the social media platforms. They talked about it. The first generation sat down at the tables, dinner tables with their parents, and they said, Dad, Mom, we need to get involved. And they even saw Sunday school Bible studies in church as a place for healing. So I don't think we are silent, but we are certainly not there yet. Whether we will get there, we will. We will. We are late into this immigrant scene. Give us a little bit more time. I'm very positive about where the next generation will take. And so will the immigrant church continue to survive? Of course it will continue to survive. As long as there are newer immigrants coming into the country, it will survive. Otherwise, yeah, it will survive if the second generation takes leadership. We're getting there. Thank you.
We here at the Center for Asian American Christianity at Princeton Theological Seminary invite you to join in the ongoing dialogue on Asian American faith, identity, social engagement, and ministry through our newsletter, blog, and upcoming conferences.